Couple of things as we get into this episode of the Between the Ropes podcast. Please subscribe to the podcast. You can do it on iTunes and you can rate and review the podcast. That helps out tremendously. Just give a quick review and hopefully you give me 5 stars for the podcast. You can also subscribe on Google Play, Stitcher, and on the TuneIn app as well. And if you could, please support Between the Ropes on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/Between the Ropes. You can support the podcast there. As little as $1 a month goes a long way in giving me more freedom and doing more when it comes to Between the Ropes. If you want to give more money there than just $1 a month, that would be great. $3, $5 a month, whatever you feel comfortable with, goes a long way in helping me keep doing Between the Ropes. So once again, that is at patreon.com/Between the Ropes. Also, if you have not listened to the podcast from earlier this week, where I spoke with Cowboy James Storm from TNA Wrestling, Global Force Wrestling, Impact Wrestling, whatever you want to call it, go back and listen to that podcast. I'm telling you, it is worth the time. A nice long conversation with James Storm, and he is very honest and very open about everything, where he talks about the 15 years that he has spent with that company. He is one of the few originals with that company that is still there. And we cover a lot of ground, from talking about what it was like to be there with the company since the beginning, to Jeff Jarrett coming back and rejoining the company, to the change in ownership, and also the change of name to Global Force Wrestling. Plus, we talk about Slammiversary with his match with EC3. There were some things there that he was very open about when it came to that match and that storyline. And he also goes into great detail, and I mean great detail, on the DCC storyline, his idea for it, how he thought it was going to play out, and how it went totally different than what he had originally planned. So a lot of things to cover with that interview with James Storm. So if you haven't listened to it, go back and listen to that podcast. Promising you, it is worth the listen. So let's get into this episode now of Between the Ropes. First timer joining me here on the podcast, Spencer Davies, a buddy of mine. So you had been excited about trying to come on the podcast. You had been trying to weasel your way onto the podcast for a while, and I gave in, and you are on the Between the Ropes podcast.
Yes. Thank you for having me on, Brian. I've literally been dying to talk about WWE for like literally my entire life on a podcast that means something. And this one's very, very good. So I'm just really happy to be on.
For anybody who wants to follow Spencer, I'll say this right now. Me and Spencer know each other because I produce the Basketball Insiders podcast and work with the website, and that's where Spencer works. So his forte is in basketball, but he's a huge WWE fan and wrestling fan as well. So people can follow you. You have two different Twitter accounts, though. So which one should they follow?
Well, okay, if you want to see me actually be professional and talk about sports itself, that's at Spin Davies. But my wrestling Mark account, where I literally tweet everything in all caps and annoy the crap out of everybody, that's at Spinny Wrasslin.
So, Spinny Wrasslin?
Wrasslin, like Wrasslin.
Spinny Wrasslin. Okay.
Yep.
Way to be professional there, bud.
I have like, I think maybe 60 followers on that account. So well, it's my personal place to like put my wrestling diary, if you would.
We'll try to get that up to 65 after this podcast.
Oh, perfect.
Benchmarks. We will talk about the Kurt Angle storyline that has left me depressed for the last week or since Monday here in a couple minutes. So we have breaking news today about Brock Lesnar, and this doesn't surprise me in the least. It surprised me actually last year when Brock Lesnar like jumped out of the USADA testing pool and said, I'm done fighting. Cause I always thought like he can make a ton of money and if WWE is going to let him do it, he's going to keep fighting. And he won his last fight against Mark Hunt. And then he got popped for, you know, steroids, which he's denied, but you know, he got suspended a year. So the news came out today that Lesnar quietly is back in the testing pool. He still has 5 months left to serve on his suspension, which means that he could fight middle of December, it looks like. And the talk also is that Lesnar and his real life BFF, Paul Heyman, when they were in Vegas for International Fight Week recently, and they did meet with the brass, and of course UFC are like, you want to fight here? Come on, please. We need more big box office draws. So we don't know if this is going to happen yet exactly, but it sure looks like Brock Lesnar is going to be headed back into the fighting world for at least one more fight. And he's got SummerSlam coming up here, you know, in the end of August. And there's been a lot of talk that he was going to drop the title there. So you put two and two together, it makes me really believe, like, after SummerSlam, one way or another, Brock Lesnar is not going to be the Universal Champion anymore.
From the squared circle to the octagon, we'll see what happens. I don't know. I do like what they're going to do here at the program with SummerSlam, though. It's certainly looking like it's going to be a fatal four-way. And that's a gigantic fatal four-way. I mean, you think about one, Lesnar, the size of him, the sheer size of him. And then you have Samoa Joe, obviously Roman Reigns, the guy who's been carrying the flag for a long time here now in WWE, probably the last 3-4 years. And then you add in Braun Strowman, who I think should actually have the title for the way that they've been pushing him and really making him look like a monster.
See, I disagree with that because I like the way that they book Braun. I don't want to see him be the champion yet. And I think we are headed towards this fatal four-way, which I get it. I understand it. I'm not the biggest fan of those. If they're going to do multi-person matches, I'd much rather see a triple threat. But the problem with this is if you do a triple threat, then somebody gets left out. And that person would probably be Braun Strowman, and he should be involved. I would wait to hold off and do Strowman against Lesnar down the line, but I don't think Strowman needs the championship yet. I'm a firm believer that you put 3 or 4 people in that match for the championship at SummerSlam, then it's an easy opportunity to take the title off of Brock where he doesn't have to get beat, but he loses the title. And the person that I think would benefit the most from it right now would be Samoa Joe. And Samoa, you know, he's a regular there. He's going to be on every week. It's going to mean a lot. And he could be the champion for 3 or 4 months, kind of get this test run or whatever you want to call it. And it would, like I said, it would mean a lot for him. And to me, that would be the pick, would be Joe. But we don't even know what the match is going to be. Hell, if they still want to do 2 singles matches out of those 4 guys, I'd probably be all for it.
I definitely agree with you that Joe could definitely be the champ and really carry the flag there, too. For me, I think that with Braun, the fact that you've had him defeat Roman Reigns in multiple different matches, and most recently this ambulance match and how he's been feuding with him for, I mean, it seems like 6 months now. That's the reason that you put the strap on him. And then, like, they would go back and you know, like, Roman is never going to stop getting a push ever. So if you put those two together in a feud for the title around WrestleMania, I think that would be the biggest draw. But with Samoa Joe, I feel like if he got the title after SummerSlam, that his run would be very similar to Kevin Owens. Maybe not as I guess bland of a run because of, you know, everything that happened and it wasn't very serious with Chris Jericho on the side. But I do like the idea of Joe having the title. I just think that Braun Strowman's really, you can capitalize on what you're investing into him right now, because he's honestly my favorite character on the show right now. And he might be the most intimidating and entertaining to me. And I'm not usually like that with big guys.
Right. I'm not either, but they've done such a great job with him. And, you know, he doesn't really cut these long promos. He's just always yelling, "I'm not finished with you yet," you know, and going after Roman. If they went with him as the champion, though, and they took it all the way to WrestleMania and say that's where him and Roman faced again and Roman won, problem to me is the dynamic between those two, because they are desperately trying to make Braun Strowman into a bad guy. You know, they're trying to make him do a heel, and right, you can't do that against Roman Reigns. I mean, the more that he hurts, injures, whatever he's going to do to Roman Reigns, people cheer him that much more. People, yes, love it. I mean, he can do it against anybody. They probably love it, but especially to Roman, man, people go crazy about it. So, and with Roman, you know, if he was to take down Braun Strowman and take the title from him, people would hate him even more than they do already.
Well, they're gonna hate Roman Reigns regardless, though. That's just how this is going. The dynamic of heel face is just so, like, gone to me now.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're like maybe Elias Samson, who, like, literally nobody wants to hear play a guitar, and he's got that old school, like, 90s heat type of thing going. But or Baron Corbin when he's attacking Shinsuke Nakamura from behind. That's classic heel heat there. But overall, just mostly heel face dynamic is just completely gone. So I think regardless of what's going to happen with Roman Reigns, he's going to get the title back at some point, and people are going to boo. I think that's just written on the wall.
It is. No matter what, though, it seems like they're going to fight the crowd on that. Like, nope, we're still going to try to do it.
And they're going to try to John Cena him. But I think that unlike John Cena, that Roman Reigns eventually will turn heel here soon. So especially the way that they've been making him act more, kind of.
We've been saying that for 2 years.
That's true. But I mean, if you just look at the way that ambulance match ended,
yeah,
how he went after him kind of like a sore loser type of way after the way he went after Strowman, that kind of planted a little bit of seeds of is this a little bit of a double turn type of thing going, like slow burn a little bit.
Well, here,
so I don't know.
I'll give you the counter argument to that. Then this is the way I think WWE management thought about that, because we look at it as that one night, like, oh, Roman's a sore loser. He's going after Roman. But they will tell the story and saying, well, if you were Roman, you'd do the same thing, because it wasn't too long before this where Braun Strowman tried to kill the man because he tipped him over while he was strapped down to a gurney and then tipped over the ambulance he was in.
Yes, he did. And that was an amazing
Which was
segment,
incredible. Like every amazing segment. That's where the beginning of I'm not finished with you yet started. Like that whole phenomenon. I'm not finished with you yet.
That's literally his thing now. As I love it.
Comes charging out.
Always screaming.
Oh, have you seen the meme with it?
What? No, I don't think I have.
There's a meme with it saying I'm not finished with you yet, with Braun, I think, standing in the back of the ambulance, arms totally raised.
I love it. I love it.
It's incredible.
He's my profile picture on my Spinny Wrestling account. So,
and then if you think he's a great heel, go on to YouTube and you can see video of him being the most playful, lovable guy rapping.
Really?
Yeah.
I do know. I did see that he made an appearance for the Brewers or something. Like,
he's like a really nice guy. He's just a smiley, happy-go-lucky kind of guy.
Big country dude. He's got
he's
that
country strong.
His,
country
his
strong, advice. Man.
Country strong, yeah, exactly.
He is, man. He's a beast. I ran into him like 2 days after he debuted on the main roster, and we were in a restaurant, and like, you can't miss Braun Strowman because of how big he is, but then he was wearing like a bright orange shirt, like anybody would stand out in the crowd wearing this.
That is hilarious.
And, I just went up to him and introduced myself and said, hey, man, enjoyed seeing the debut and best of luck. And he was like, thanks, man. He's a super nice guy.
I wonder what he would actually say, kind of sound like outside of his that kind of thing. Like, I've never actually heard him like talk like normal.
Follow him on Instagram or go on to YouTube. There's clips. He's singing in the car and joking around with people all the time.
That's awesome.
The era of breaking character is way gone, especially with a guy like Braun Strowman.
Oh, yeah. Kayfabe is completely dead. Oh, I mean, unless you're Giovanna Angle, who literally tweeted something out after the Jason Jordan thing got brought up.
Oh, what did she say?
What? No, she like literally just mashed the keyboard like, good night.
Well, how about Gable? Like, what?
Yeah. What?
I was so upset when they did that angle. Like, I mean, the rumor had been like, okay, he's going to reveal like he's got a kid, from some relationship from back in the day. And I didn't want to believe it. And then as it came closer, and even that night, you're like, all right, they're going to do it. And you're thinking it's going to be, Chad Gable. Makes a lot of sense and whatnot. And even then I was just like, please don't do this. Please don't do this. And then they did it, but it wasn't Gable. It was Jason Jordan, because he kind of looks like Kurt, whatever. And I'm laughing about this, but I was so sad because, like, I'm a big fan of American Alpha. And I think everybody knows this. Like, I loved watching those guys in NXT. I mean, I was very happy that they got called up. And even though they won the SmackDown Tag Championships, they didn't really do too much with them over there. And I thought there's still all these different opportunities to really let them loose against, the Usos or some other teams that they could have done it with. And hell, even if they kept them together and put them on Raw, there was plenty of opportunities to do great matches there. And like, they've been missing for the last 3 months outside of Gable doing two singles matches on SmackDown. Like,
excellent matches, by the way.
Yeah. I keep putting American Alpha on the back of a milk carton, like wondering where these guys are at. And then they do this angle, and it's like, They're broken up. Team is done, which maybe will work out for each guy's in singles, but WWE is just on this tear right now of breaking up their tag teams, and they're just not invested in tag teams. They've broken apart another good one, and now we got to see exactly where this angle goes.
Yeah, you know what? I think that the way they handled it wasn't the greatest, but I don't mind the angle as much as other people do. I think the reason that all these tag teams are breaking up, I mean, Enzo and Cass, you've got American Alpha broken up now, and I'm sure, you know, some more will come up soon, but that's because probably, you know, they're pushing the Hardy Boys to the moon. They've got the New Day anchoring down SmackDown now with the Usos, and they got all the other, you know, these other teams that are like established vets trying to, you know, they're getting the push right now, whereas, you know, the other guys and are trying to develop in NXT or try to find their way, like guys like Breezango on SmackDown also trying to find their way, which they're doing an excellent job of that, by the way. But I don't know why they decided to pull it this soon, but I'm kind of looking forward to it because Jason Jordan, I mean, athletic as ever, you know, he does remind of Kurt Angle, just like Chad Gable does too. I mean, it was either one of them that was going to be the son, the illegitimate son Angle here, and I think it was a good idea on paper. Now we've got to see how it turns out in the coming weeks. But the energy that Jason Jordan brings to the ring, I think that's going to really help him succeed because that's really what he brought to that tag team in American Alpha and NXT with Chad Gable being the perfect partner.
I will agree with that. The thing that upset me about the whole thing is in breaking up the tag team is that we've seen the success that WWE can do or can have with tag teams, especially even though they haven't done it too much recently on the main roster necessarily, but they've done it in NXT. Like, even their match of the year last year involved tag teams. You know, when they were talking about, it was the Revival against DIY in the 2 out of 3 falls match. Which
and
they
the Revival versus American Alpha, one of the takeovers, was an amazing match, right, too. And those two had an amazing chemistry. I didn't know why they didn't both come up at the same time.
I know. I wanted them to see them continue that feud on the main roster. But
yes,
you've got something with these tag teams. You can do great business with these tag teams. But for whatever reason, they don't like them on the main roster, Vince McMahon. And, you know, they're just not investing in tag teams. They're just breaking them up left and right. I mean, I was not a fan of them even breaking up DIY. And it was an emotional breakup, and it was done extremely well. And unfortunately, Ciampa got injured, you know, right before then and then even during that match when they broke up. But I thought that, like, with DIY, I would have kept them together, and I would have put them up the main roster.
And that was really surprising, actually, that they did it that soon, especially, I mean, you look at Enzo and Cass, who were literally together for nearly 5 years through developmental and the main roster.
Yeah.
But I think that match at the Cruiserweight Classic between Gargano and Ciampa was one of the reasons they were like, oh, maybe we have a money feud between these two headed up into whenever we want to put them against
each other.
But you
can do that whenever you want. I mean, keep the team together. Yes. Like this, like when they weren't doing anything with American Alpha, I was sitting there going, just bring up DIY and let those two teams, and I know they're both babyface teams, that let them have great matches for the next 3 or 4 months. Just let them go. I mean, they'll tear it up. I mean, they'll probably shame everybody or just about everybody on SmackDown. But, I mean, they'll go out there and have great matches. They'll have great reactions. And instead, they're like, we're just not invested in tag team wrestling right now.
Yeah, they're going with their trustworthy guys. I mean, the New Day and Usos, I mean, how long have they, you know, they've had how many feuds in the last, you know, like 3-4 years?
Yeah.
You know, like those type of teams. Sometimes they put together strange bedfellows like Sheamus and Cesaro. They're doing a good job.
Absolutely.
I think they're a great tag team right now. But they're clearly not as interested in those feuds as they are, you know, some of these mid-card feuds and even at the top of the list, too.
And we'll see what Jason Jordan does. You know, now he's been put in this position. They'll see exactly where they go with it. I mean, I will give it a chance. The thing about Jason, though, is he's an incredible athlete. He's a great talent. But when he was in NXT, and it's no fault of his own, but like they couldn't figure him out as a singles guy. They couldn't find the right tag team partner for him forever. Remember, he was in NXT for several years.
Yeah, before. He was with Ty Dillinger. Him and Dillinger were a tag team for I think a year or two.
Yeah.
And then they split them up.
Mm-hmm. They finally found Gable to put with him, and they're like instant chemistry. Everything worked out. They had the gimmick and everything down. And it worked. And then now here he is. He's not even part of another tag team. He's just off on his own. the thing for Jason that obviously I think is his weakness, and he'll admit to it, is his promos. So that's going to be the big thing where he's going to have to step up. The good thing for him is he's going to have Kurt Angle with him. Now, there, when we talk about where they're going to go with this, like, are they going to give him a big push or where they're going to go with this? There could be a lot more to this. It could just be, okay, maybe he really is Kurt Angle's, you know, kid, you know, in the storyline, and that, and they continue that for now into the end of time. But they could also do something where this whole thing is a ruse by somebody to dupe Kurt Angle.
Ooh, I never thought of it that way. That's, well, actually kind of,
somebody brought this up to me the other day.
There.
Yeah, how about this one? What if Stephanie McMahon is ticked off, or Triple H is ticked off? You know, that Kurt Angle, you know, came back to the company and he's now the GM of Raw. So they go, well, we're going to do something to, you know, get him, take the eye off the ball.
Distracted a little bit.
Yeah, he's distracted. He's not doing a good job. So they bring in Jason Jordan. They make it worth his while. They're like, hey, man, we're going to, you know, buy you off and put you in this position, and we'll protect you and whatever. And you just got to go along with this. And then, you know, 6 months later, it's revealed that this happened. I mean, you could do something like that. I mean,
is that going too far for creative right now, though? It seems like
we're
you know, creative get pretty lazy sometimes. So yeah. I don't know. Are they going to do something like that, do you think?
They could. I mean, that would be looking way down the line. And
Yes. They
might, even if they have something like that planned, it doesn't mean that they couldn't change it, you know, along the way, which we've seen, you know, 1,000 times in the past week alone, probably. You know, mm-hmm. So, I mean, things like that happen, but it's a different kind of storyline, too, that we haven't seen in a while, because this, like, harkens back a little bit more to the Attitude Era days where they did things like this. We haven't seen it in a little while, especially in WWE. I mean, TNA tried to do it and failed miserably with it, because they didn't know what they were doing, and it was just a mess. And they tried to do something.
I was waiting for Claire Lynch to come out.
Oh, my God.
And that Kurt Angle reveal.
If you ever talk to AJ Styles, ask him to explain the storyline. He'll put his head down, shake his head, and go, I still don't understand it.
I just remember watching that, and I'm just like, you know, AJ Styles and Christopher Daniels, this is an amazing feud, but what in the world are they doing?
Oh, my God. Daniels and Kazarian don't even want to talk about it. They're just like, what the hell? What were they thinking? Like, just a whole mess.
Oh, such God, a mess, man.
God almighty.
It got pretty bad then. It did get pretty bad then.
We'll see where they go.
I do want to, you know, at least give a little bit of kudos to the Raw creative team, because at least, you know, over the past few months, they've had a lot of drawn out storylines. Like, it hasn't been like an immediate payoff. Like with the Enzo and Cass thing, you had to wait like a month before you found out that Cass was the one attacking Enzo. You had this Kurt Angle storyline that literally went on for, I think, 2 months. So you always have a reason to keep watching, like, from each thing. Like the payoff might have been not that great with the Jason Jordan thing, but you were watching because they were advertising, oh, man, what's Kurt Angle got to say? And that's what's going to get you your ratings right there.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, if you keep on stretching out a storyline rather than say, oh, this is who it was the whole time. Same thing with the Dean Ambrose and Miz feud, as much as I don't like it. But with, like, the Teddy Bears thing, it led to, you know, the Miztourage or whatever with Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel. So, like, you know, it's those things that keep you going. And the Breezango thing right now with whoever's destroying their office, as silly as it is, you know, that kind of stuff, I think, is really what you get invested in.
It is. It's just that long-term planning that you have to go with, and do they really have that? It's just like, oh, yeah, we got to do something with these guys to continue that going. Mm-hmm. That Miz Ambrose storyline, I'm convinced that's not going to end until 2020.
It might not. It could be like Randy Orton and Christian all over again, or Sheamus and Del Rio just never stop fighting ever.
Well, remember when, like, they would be like, oh, we need a big match to do. Sheamus and Randy Orton. And then, like, the crowd would be so down on it. They did that for one of the Raws after WrestleMania, and nobody cared about the match, and we were chanting for the Ice Cream Man, and balls were flying and everything.
JBL.
Yeah, that happened. Mm-hmm. I felt so bad for those guys. I was just like,
it's so awkward when you watch those shows and those chants are going through. Because, I mean, it's partly Kratos' fault, but when you see, like, the talent in there, like, actually trying to bust their ass and do the right thing, mm-hmm. and then, like, that's the stuff that's going around, it really must kind of, you know, get to him a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I will say this too, when it comes to that storyline with Angle and Jason Jordan, I think a lot of people believe, like, Kurt Angle was going to get back in the ring yeah, maybe in time for SummerSlam. I don't get the sense that he's getting back in the ring anytime soon. Like, I don't know what WWE's plan is. I know he's always been like, hey, if they want me, you know, I'd be happy to do it, but I'm not pushing for it. I'm happy just to be here in the role that I'm in. I don't think WWE has any plans for him to get back in the ring, especially now that he's got this kind of surrogate with Jason Jordan. So I don't think we're going to see Kurt Angle wrestle anytime soon.
Yeah, maybe not. I think it would be kind of cool if, you know, this storyline drew out, like, you know, I kept saying. And, you know, some way here, if it isn't the McMahons trying to, you know, dupe Angle or whatever, if Jason Jordan kind of becomes a little bit of a prick, kind of, you know, like
maybe, I want him to be like Kurt Angle when he debuted, where he was just like, I'm better than everybody. I'm a real athlete.
And then that would lead to a match maybe between those two, father-son match kind of thing. You know, like, I think that would be interesting. And then that right there, like, if Kurt Angle put over Jason Jordan, say, at a spectacle like WrestleMania or something, that would do wonders for Jason Jordan.
Well, I'm thinking,
and I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, because, I mean, they might not waste Jason Jordan on Kurt Angle if Kurt Angle is going to wrestle again. But just, you know, throwing some ideas out there.
Well, I think Kurt would be all for it, because he respects the hell out of Jason Jordan being, you know, an amateur wrestler, and, you know, just how athletic the guy is. I will say that if I go back to my idea to say Triple H and Stephanie are involved, that's something that could play out long term. And while Kurt Angle, I don't think, is wrestling anytime soon, they could put him in the ring at WrestleMania, and it makes sense to do a Kurt Angle Triple H match at that point, because then you can do that match and it doesn't really affect anybody else. Like, Triple H isn't, you know, working with one of the other guys that's kind of on their way up, or whatever you want to say. It's kind of this standalone between two veteran guys, and it doesn't matter who wins or loses.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Triple H Sting thing. You know, Triple H always seems to be that guy. When somebody comes back, they have to face him. I feel like that's always the way they go, which is fine. I just wish it would be a little bit less predictable than that, especially because, I mean, how many times have Kurt Angle and Triple H faced off? We already know, you know, what they do with
each other. It's been years, though.
It has been years. It has been years. And the nostalgia would be kind of cool. I'll give you that. But I feel like if you would give him to somebody like, I don't know, like, renew a rivalry that they didn't see when they were in TNA or something, like Kurt Angle, AJ Styles, or Kurt Angle, Samoa Joe. I think those matches were incredible, and not that many people in the WWE, you know, fanhood know about those. And I feel like that would be a good spot for any of them. Or, you know, if Daniel Bryan were to get cleared out, you know, I know that's a dream match.
Right.
You know, like, so, like, just kind of thinking outside of the box rather than going with what you know will work. I know it's risky, but.
Yeah. Did you think, on leading into Monday, when they were doing this whole storyline, was there any part of you, because there was with me, I thought it was a long shot, though, and I had mentioned it last week on the podcast, and I didn't want them to do it, but I just thought, well, there's a couple little key things here, and it just so happened that they came together, or there was a lot of coincidences. But did you think that it was going to be Dixie Carter involved in that storyline?
I did. I thought I was going to be an affair with Dixie, and that Dixie was going to be on WWE television, which I would have never thought in 1,000 years. And when they even announced that she was going to be involved in the 24, my jaw dropped. Because I just know, you know, how much, you know, bad blood it seemed there would be between WWE and TNA. But this goes back to, you know, Vince McMahon not thinking that TNA was competition.
So, right. Well, you know what the thing
why
is,
they had her on.
She still has an ownership stake in that company.
Really?
Yeah, she still does. It's very low. It's very quiet. But she still has a little stake.
She's still technically a part of it, huh?
She is, but she has no power. She has no control whatsoever. So she's not involved in day-to-day decisions.
See, now this is what needs to happen if TNA ever does, you know, fold eventually. I think that WWE needs to purchase that library, because there are a lot of matches that people need to see between that, whether it's the Angle Jarrett feuds, or, like I said, Samoa Joe, AJ Styles, all of those guys, you know, Austin Aries, Bobby Roode had like a lot of great matches there. I feel like that would be a very big benefit to both of them.
But that's not going to happen anytime soon, because Anthem's got money and they bought them now. So that they're not going anywhere anytime soon.
You know, down the line, I'm talking here, but I think that would really be very beneficial to both parties, honestly.
Oh, hell, they almost had it a year ago.
Ugh, if only. Just not another Invasion storyline, please.
Oh, well, there's no way that they would do that, because they don't look at TNA or whatever you want to call it, Impact Wrestling. Oh, yeah, it's got like 10 names now. But You know, they never looked at them on their level. They would never do an invasion angle unless it was like, okay, on Raw tonight, we're going to do an invasion angle and all these guys get squashed.
Oh, boy.
Remember, hey, go back to when they did it with WCW. And come the end of it, I mean, it didn't last as long as it should have. It didn't have all of the different wrestlers that they should have had because they didn't want to pay for Goldberg and...
I mean, Booker T was your highest sell there in WCW.
Yeah, they didn't want to pay for some of those guys. You know, they could have had Sting and Nash and Goldberg.
They had Bob Bagwell for like 2 weeks.
Oh, my God. But, like, they didn't invest in it. They didn't get Bischoff that early on. They didn't do that. And then the feud lasted only months before they paid it off at that invasion show. And, like, that show did, like, huge numbers. It did, like, 750,000 buys. But at the end of it, we knew WWE was going to win because there was no way Vince McMahon was going to let this continue for a long period of time. And he was going to make sure that his company, even though he owned the other company, he was going to, you know, squash them, you know, in a short period of time.
I know it was a flop, but I actually did like that storyline just because I like seeing new faces a lot. And the fact that they like kind of pushed those new faces.
We had a Stone Cold heel turn involved in there and ECW got involved and the Stone
seeing
Cold
Paul
heel
Heyman
turn
back on TV and stuff. That was awesome.
Paul Heyman with hair, still had a ponytail, I think.
Yep, the receding hairline, but also into the ponytail, just like he always did.
Pulling it tight. So not only was I depressed this week because the end of American Alpha, they killed Talking Smack. So
yeah, why? I don't understand that one. I don't
get mixed answers
bit
about this, man, because so Talking Smack will only exist after SmackDown brand pay-per-views. So the weekly series, gone. I love that series. There was one of the things I didn't like about 205 Live, literally, was that I had to wait the extra hour to watch Talking Smack or 45 minutes, whatever it was.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
you had great chemistry with Renee Young and Daniel Bryan. They had a lot of fun with it. And it was a great
show.
It was a great platform for the talent to go out there and just ad lib and do promos and, you know, do their characters and take it wherever they wanted. I mean, you had that Miz and Daniel Bryan feud. You had
Prime example.
You had fun with Daniel Bryan and the Usos. I mean, Sweet Beats was born off of that. You know, talking about the Big Hog and like how many different people like Alexa Bliss got to go on that show and do promos and Baron Corbin,
Kevin Owens, and even Jinder Mahal before he got that big push.
Absolutely. So, I mean, to me, those are the kind of promos, I mean, that they should have been doing on TV and not the stuff where like you're seeing a little bit more of the real people, you know, but like use that style where you're not being scripted, play it up. You're kind of out there on your own, but you know the character better than anybody because you're the one playing it.
You're in the middle between kayfabe and realism.
Absolutely, you know? And then they got rid of it. And not only did they get rid of it, they didn't tell the host that they got rid of it. Like
they found out through Twitter, yep.
Yeah, Renee Young found out on Twitter when somebody else like retweeted the story. So PWInsider.com broke the story. Somebody else like mentioned it and mentioned Renee Young on it, like tagged her on it, and she was just like, what? And then Daniel Bryan, who only goes on Twitter or goes on the internet like once a week, goes on there to support Sami Zayn and his cause for helping people in Syria. And he goes, he came on the internet and he goes on the Twitter and he sees this and he's like, what the hell? I'm out of a job. You know? And so it's really strange. I mean, was the viewership a lot? Probably not. I mean, there's been some talk about where was the viewership and everything, but I just look at it as a long-term thing of look at this platform. It's a fun show. It's something that you get more YouTube videos off of. It's content for the network. And Vince McMahon just decided, I don't like the show and I'm pulling the plug.
There's no way that had to cost too much either to keep on.
No, that's cheap.
I mean, it's on their own network. I mean, you have the same equipment that you're using during the shows. What I was reading was that he killed it because it was too off script and he was kind of probably a little bit afraid of what people might say, but that's the point of the show. That was the point of the show when you started the show, is that it was going to be off script. You were going to learn a little bit about the people that were, you know, doing it, and about a little bit more of their personality, even if it isn't all the way their real life, you know, person, but their character.
Right.
But I think that the platform was amazing. I completely agree with you, and I don't understand why they killed it, because I mean, that I looked forward to watching that stuff and how they would react, and the way that they had a good chemistry with Daniel Bryan, whether it was a heel that was being mad at Daniel Bryan or whether it was somebody trying to vie for an opportunity. They would set up matches from that show, like, for the next week.
Dude, they did angles on there where people jumped other people. I mean, yeah, exactly. They did all of that on that show. I mean, you had to...
It was different.
Yeah,
it was different, and then they decided to cut it.
I mean, I know that there was times where heels would come on there, and they would act kind of cool, like AJ Styles would come on there when he was a heel, and he would cut serious promos, but then he would just be kind of a laid-back dude on there. The Usos would be rapping, you know, with Daniel Bryan and having fun there. Dude, the promos that John Cena cut when he got on that show, especially that the last one before the match with The Miz... When they, before WrestleMania, I mean, when John Cena came on that show, it was like a big deal. And like,
yes.
Cause he only came on there like once a month. And when he came on there, that dude just unleashed holy hell, like, and showed why he's the best talker in the business. And it's gone. I mean, like, it's going to be after the pay-per-view, but it's like, you know,
I mean,
that might even be scripted when it's on there.
The one that's going to be hosting it too.
No, well, it's Lawler and Renee Young. They're not going to have Daniel Bryan, which sucks.
Yeah. Right.
Because Daniel was so great. He was having so much fun on there, you know, and I mean, I wonder if they're going to even script it when they're on after pay-per-view, like they're going to be really tight on everything.
Yeah,
like this is the way it's going to be. And, you know,
they probably didn't like when AJ said something about TNA on there or something like that.
Dude,
you know,
he did that on Edge and Christian's show on the network.
I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. Vince is probably very particular stuff, which is kind of crappy. But
I don't know how much Vince is watching the Edge and Christian show. Now, mind you, remember, he was frozen for the entire first season, and Edge and Christian stole the remote control from him. That's the thing that they played out on that. But I'm sure he knows what's going on, but probably doesn't watch everything that's happening. So, like, when they've got AJ Styles and they're doing a play on words talking about him and TNA and him and the Bullet Club, I don't know if Vince is watching all of that.
Yeah. Now, here's an example, and you brought it up earlier with The Miz. So when I'm watching Talking Smack and I see him, you know, cut this incredible promo on Daniel Bryan, and he's, like, literally almost to tears talking to this dude. I'm texting my buddy Glenn, who does his own podcast here in Cleveland, because he's really good friends with the King, and he's great friends with Miz. And I'm like, dude, was that real what Mike was doing, or was that script? Like I'm legit like invested.
Right.
I'm like, what in the world was that?
Because some
it
of
was
it
brand
is real.
New. That was the first time that ever happened.
Right.
And I was like, wow, that is crazy. Are they going to set this up? Is this going to be Daniel Bryan versus Miz at WrestleMania or something?
Well, remember, they pulled back on that because I think Vince and others said, hey, we are setting up a storyline that cannot pay off because Daniel cannot get back in the ring. So they pulled back on it. And then the next thing you know, Miz was back on the show and he was cutting promos on Daniel Bryan again.
And it's crazy because, I mean, look what that's done. Look what that itself. Talking Smack has skyrocketed Miz to back where he was before and then some.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, until they put him back on Raw.
Yeah, of course. We don't have to talk about that. At least he's Intercontinental Champion.
But when he was on SmackDown, and I had predicted this, and I was far from the only person that did, but when they had, before they had changed around the rosters this year, I was just like, Miz is coming off such a great 2016. That dude is going to win the World Championship on SmackDown in 2017. Like he has earned it. And then they put him on the Land of Giants. Sounds like he is toast.
Yep. It's crazy. It's crazy when those rosters first came out too. I was just like, man, I'm going to love Raw. Look at all that new talent. And then like SmackDown ended up being the best because the production was different. They added a bunch of different elements to it.
Right.
It's crazy how that worked out.
And then when you talk about some of the new talent, so like they've got Nakamura, of course, on SmackDown, and they've got him in this feud with Baron Corbin, and I don't know if that's going to play all the way out to SmackDown or what they're going to do there, but I love Nakamura. A lot of people do, you know, the entrance, the whole thing with him, and he's already just kind of feeling like another guy on SmackDown.
He is.
Like, when they brought in AJ Styles last year, like, AJ, even when he lost a couple of times, like, he stayed special for a while. But
he's still special.
He's maybe not as special, but he is still special, I think. Mm-hmm. Whatever they've done with Nakamura, and I can't really put my finger on it, but he does not feel special right now.
What they need to do, I think, is kind of like what they did with Finn Balor with that entrance. He needs a secondary entrance and save the one entrance for pay-per-views or something.
Well, I mean, hey, you want to talk about a guy that doesn't feel special right now? Finn Balor.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I know that he was injured and he came back, but like the guy doesn't even get to challenge for a championship that he never lost. And He just comes back, and now he's doing something with the Drifter. Yeah, I'm still calling him the Drifter. And
I love Elias Sampson. There will be no Elias Sampson slander on this podcast.
Hey,
but no, I
good,
I agree,
good for Elias, but man, like Finn, it should be above that. And by the way, Elias tried to kill Finn Balor this week. That was attempted homicide.
Now you want to talk about Jeff Jarrett? My God, back there,
that was an honest mistake by Elias because he was swinging for his shoulder. But the problem was, like, the guitar hit the shoulder and slid off, and like slammed into Finn Balor's head and cut the side of his head open.
That was Attitude Era like,
dude. That was brutal. I don't know what happened off of that, but I was worried that Finn was going to, you know, suffer another concussion.
Like the Jinder Mahal thing, yeah. What is it with that, by the way? Finn Balor getting injured, like, on Raw.
Why are you hitting Finn Balor with a freaking guitar? Don't do it!
Because he didn't let him finish his song, man.
Oh, give me happening. A break. By the way, why is Finn Balor feuding with Elias Sampson in the first place?
I know. I agree with you on that end. As much as I like Elias Sampson, I do think that Finn Balor deserves a lot better than what he's doing
ridiculous.
Right now.
And then you got
least they're gonna put him in a feud with Bray Wyatt, though. So
yeah, but I mean, you've got Shinsuke now, and I don't know what they're gonna do with him for SummerSlam. But like I said, you know, he's not as hot as he should be. And to me, the way you break that out is you have to put him in a long match against a great opponent at SummerSlam.
Yeah, it's called Sami Zayn.
Well, they could do Sami Zayn, even though now he's losing to Mike Kanellis. Get it right. It's Kanellis. He took his wife's name.
He did take his wife's name. The power of love.
I'll get to that in a second. That stupid match on SmackDown. But stupid booking for that match. Let me clarify that. But I've been advocating for a while that I want to see Shinsuke against AJ at SummerSlam.
Oh, man. And they did. They actually put a tiny teaser on SmackDown before the tag match, actually.
This is the second teaser. Segment. They did the teaser of Money in the Bank with them in the ring with one another. And now they did the teaser where Shinsuke was looking at the U.S. title and said someday. So, you know, and I know they've also done this teaser with AJ and John Cena.
Oh.
To me, maybe AJ and John Cena, you do on TV in the middle of the match. That's where Jinder gets involved and you branch off Cena against Jinder at SummerSlam. And then you can go to AJ against Shinsuke at SummerSlam as well.
You know what I think needs to happen? I think because John Cena, as much as people may not like him, he can never have a bad match in my eyes. I think that him and Nakamura would be the huge, huge draw at WrestleMania.
I've been saying that forever, that I thought there's two big matches for Nakamura. One is against Styles and one against Cena. And the Cena one, I would wait till WrestleMania.
Right. You don't want to wait. Yeah, you don't want to waste that at SummerSlam.
That's the way that you get Shinsuke out of it. I mean, I don't think he's in a funk. It's just the way that he's looked at right now to really make him feel special.
If you look at the way they've handled his debut and everything, they had him fight Dolph Ziggler for 2 months. And I mean, not many people cared about Dolph Ziggler because he's kind of, you know, on a down stretch right now. And then you put
what
him
do you
in
right
these
now?
Tag matches
you mean,
and stuff.
When you say right now, do you mean 4 years?
I like Dolph Ziggler.
I do
though.
Too.
I mean, I can't big mouth him.
I'm just talking about the booking. I think he's an incredibly talented guy. I'd love to see them do more of them. It's like they'll ramp them up because we're gonna do a six way. We need a six person. Dolph. Oh, but is he strong enough right now? Let him go out there the week before and let him beat somebody a pretty big name clean. All right. He's back up there. Now he's back in contention to be the champion again. You know
it's hilarious because that was actually my first thought when that happened. He beat AJ Styles 1-2-3 clean when it's SmackDown. I think it was actually in Georgia too.
Yes.
And then he was in a big match the week after. So
absolutely. That's why they did it.
You kind of just called that down the middle.
That's exactly why they did it. They're like, this won't hurt AJ and we'll help out Dolph. And then, you know, we could have him in that big match or whatever. So yeah. By the way, so I mentioned the Mike Kanellis debut beating Sami Zayn. So apparently Maria can just get into the ring and like stop the match, you know, and then let it continue when it helps her guy. And there's nothing that comes back on her or Mike in the match. Like in the middle of the match, she just jumps in. There's like, no, stop. And the referee's like holding back and then Mike Kanellis like sucker punches Sami Zayn, hits him with the finisher, and that's that.
I will say this. At least it is kind of different the way they had that happen. I do agree with you. The booking was crappy because, I mean, Mike Kanellis, it's going to take me a while to do that.
I know.
He only got like three moves in and he beat Sammy. And I feel so bad for Sami Zayn. I just want Sami Zayn to break through in the worst way. I feel like he's going to be a Daniel Bryan type. One of these days, he's going to, you know, get some momentum. He's going to, you know, randomly win the Royal Rumble or something and win the title. Oh. And I think the way that they're, you know, keep him having him constantly lose, he's going down a Dolph Ziggler path right now.
Do people not realize like Sami Zayn is like one of the 10, maybe even 5 best wrestlers on the planet?
Insanely good. Insanely good. And that's what made him the best in NXT to me, is that he always was that underdog. And I mean, I know that's his, you know, moniker, the underdog from the underground. But I'm a huge Sami Zayn fan just for the fact that he just keeps fighting. And the way, you know, when he was talking to Mick Foley when he was on Raw or whatever, like, that was really kind of opened my eyes a little bit. He is like Mick Foley, man. Like, I mean, he's much more technically advanced than Mick, but the same kind of attitude and the same kind of, you know, like, is this guy going to be able to, you know, win in this industry? And I feel like they book him so badly. And I do like that they're putting him with Kanellis here in this feud, because I think Kanellis needs a good rub here. But I mean, eventually Sammy's going to have to start winning.
Well, does Sami Zayn remind you of somebody else that they had lose a lot of times and, you know, wasn't just your normal guy, but in the end, the fans got behind him so much that, you know, he actually succeeded?
Are you talking Daniel Bryan?
I'm talking Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
And now they think they can do that with everybody. Oh, we'll just have him be the lovable loser and, you know, go out there and have good matches and it'll get over in the end or whatever. I'm like, it doesn't work that way with everybody. I mean, you know, Daniel Bryan, and it's nothing against Sami Zayn, who's an incredible talent, but Daniel Bryan was just this one in a million kind of situation.
Ball of fire. That's what he was.
Yeah.
I mean, a great ball of fire.
Well, they've got great balls of fire there. I don't know if you can ever replicate Daniel Bryan. I mean, and the second that you try to replicate it, that's when you know it's not going to work. Because Daniel was just a thing that happened on its own. You know, the way that, you know, he rose in WWE against everything that they wanted. They thought they had a really good talent, but they didn't expect to do that with him. And he just bucked all the odds because the crowd got behind him so much.
Yeah, the yes thing wasn't even getting over on shows for like the first month or two. And then those people at WrestleMania were literally the reason that he got over.
He got over
when
he lost.
Because all of those yes signs.
When he lost a 16-second match at WrestleMania, that's what got him over.
Yeah.
Just that.
How funny is that?
It's ridiculous. I was at that show. I remember, like, so I was up in the media box and like they rang the bell and I like looked at the monitor. I looked down at my computer screen and I looked back up and I saw the kick and I was like, what? And like he pinned him. I was like, did that just happen? We all like turn to one another like, what the hell just happened?
Kiss of death. AJ Lee.
Apparently, man.
AJ Punk.
They did have some good matches, though, on SmackDown, as much as I want to gripe about it. Because, yeah. You know, I mean, they did Becky Lynch against Charlotte was a really good match. The tag team match excellent. At the end was really good. So, I mean, they've got something there.
I am glad that they at least put Becky and Charlotte against each other, because I'm tired of seeing face versus heel year, like week after week, man. You know, change it up, you know, do like a triple threat or something, you know, like I know that you're trying to save your best for pay-per-views, but it gets really stale when you have the same people facing off against each other week after week after week. I mean, just look at this Finn Balor and Elias Samson thing on Raw. I think they're going to face off for the third straight week here coming up. You know,
No DQ match, man.
They do the same thing here with the Usos and New Day. They have like a single member take on a single member every time. Like, and same thing with the Hardys and Cesaro and Sheamus when they were feuding. You know, like switch it up a little, man. You know, have a little bit of creativity. You know.
By the way, I buried the lead when talking about SmackDown. The Punjabi prison was there.
Hey, I love it. I don't care what anyone says. They can kill it. They can, you know, criticize the heck out of it. I just like it because it's different. You know, I haven't seen a Punjabi prison match in 10 years.
Nobody has. There's a reason for that. By the way, I still think that it was a rib last week when on TV, like, you know, you had Jinder go on there and go, next week, I will bring with me the Punjabi prison. And the whole production team like went like, what? What the hell? What? We got to bring that damn thing here to SmackDown too?
What if it was? How funny would that be? Well, now we got to bring this thing on the road with us.
It's just like, I don't even know how to pack that thing. Was anybody still here when we brought that thing out the last time? Has anybody been here for 10 years? Where's Sam? Sam, you've been here for 12 years. How do we pack that damn thing up?
You got to put it together. It comes apart.
Well, if you look at it, it's like a desk. There's part that says A. There's one that says B. You know, here's how it connects, you know, and...
Oh,
yeah.
Man, shout out to the production team for that, man. I can't even hear the setup crew. Jeez.
So before we get to SummerSlam, we do have another pay-per-view event, whatever you want to call it. So they're doing Battleground on Sunday. So
show your colors.
Yes, they have 7 matches announced for the show. So let's run it down. So they're doing my man, Ty Dillinger, against Aiden English on the pre-show. I thought they were going to do at least a little bit more with Ty Dillinger when he came in.
Similar thing, dude. They just like with American Alpha, they just, after he did his matches and had his, you know, first pay-per-view match or whatever, they just stopped using him for like 2 weeks.
People can make fun of me all they want because I even went on here and I said, I know this probably will not happen and I know it's far-fetched, but Ty Dillinger with the 10 gimmick to me felt so hot when he came in there. And for a few weeks, and I said, if they play it up right, if they keep playing off that perfect 10 thing, and if a lot of things have to happen, but lightning could strike, and I wonder if he could ever be the world champion. Now he's on the pre-show already.
Dude, there were people in the crowd, like, chanting 10 during, like, matches with freaking John Cena and AJ Styles and Kevin Owens. They were chanting 10 during those matches.
You've got a fresh face on the main roster. Do something with this man.
Exactly. How don't you capitalize on that? It's like they know how to completely kill momentum as soon as somebody's hot.
Brutal.
So brutal.
I think Ty's going to win that match, though.
I think so, too. And shout out to Aiden English, by the way. Aiden English kind of getting blindsided with
his partner. Like Aiden. I like that gimmick.
You know?
Mm-hmm. He did that for a little while in NXT years ago.
Before he got with Gotch. Yep.
Yeah, before he did the Vaudevillains. So So here's the rest of the show. They're doing tag team match. They got the Usos against the New Day for the SmackDown Championships again.
I'm good with it, though. I mean, in the case where I said that, you know, with doing stuff over and over again, at least they have good matches together. And I do like the heel Usos a lot. It's really brought out a lot in their personality, and they've got a lot of good mic skills.
So do New Day win the titles here, or do they play this all the way out to SummerSlam?
Usos keep them.
I agree. I think they keep them. Not done yet. They're going to continue this probably till SummerSlam. They're doing Cena against Rusev in a flag match. I think that's pretty easy to pick that one.
Yeah, jeez. A little bit. I mean, if Rusev coming out in a fighter tank at WrestleMania can't beat Cena, I don't think that is going to happen this time around. And I do hate how they've been screwing over Rusev here, too, because he had those vignettes trying to come back to SmackDown, and they just had nothing for him in creative, which makes zero sense.
Don't get me going about the wonderful entrance of Rusev on a tank, which is like one of my top 3 WrestleMania moments of all time. Okay, I was there in the press box yelling, he's on a tank. Okay. Totally unprofessional, but I was yelling, he's on a tank.
Man, can you be unprofessional in a press box in a WWE event?
WWE PR people have even said, like, we love our press box. People are cheering up here. This is great.
That's so awesome.
Like, they're encouraging us to cheer. You know, people are marking out.
That's exactly the job I need right now.
By the way, is it un-American of me that while I was watching SmackDown and when John Cena was talking about the virtues of the United States and how proud he was to have the flag and how he's going to win this match and everything, that I was very happy when Rusev jumped him from behind
and started waving the Bulgarian flag?
I was like, yeah!
Are you gonna go over to Bulgaria? Oh,
I'd love to right now.
No,
there was nothing against Cena. I mean, I like Johnny Boots and Tights, but man, I'm with you when it comes to Rusev.
I mean, Cena's cut that American promo probably 1,000 times since being on the
right. He's very
WWE
good at
roster.
It, but
he's great.
Handsome Rusev is awesome. Okay,
Handsome Rusev is amazing, and they need to take advantage of his entertainment value because he's hilarious. If you even just follow him on Twitter, you see that.
Oh yeah, I'm still mad that they broke up him and Lana. Why? So they're going to do Lana, Tamina, Natalya, Becky Lynch, and Charlotte Flair in an elimination match to determine the number one contender for the women's title. I could see Lana winning this match.
If they have another Lana match with Naomi and she loses, that's three straight losses for Lana. I don't see why she's on the roster.
That's the whole gimmick that they're doing. I mean, they even did the thing on SmackDown where everybody was tripping over themselves because they wanted to fight Lana that night.
What is she, the new Eva Marie?
Something like that. Basically, that's what it is, because I don't know if Eva Marie's coming back.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I wish that they would do, you know, something better than an elimination match here. I mean, if you just even just look at that Charlotte Becky Lynch match, and you know what Natty can bring to the table. Tamina's even, starting to get a little bit over. I feel like they could have done something better than this. But, I mean, you need a number one contender, and we all know that Carmella's going to end up being the champion at some point here.
So. I'm going to say Becky Lynch wins this. And then whenever she faces Naomi, either at SummerSlam or soon thereafter, that's when Carmella gets involved with the briefcase.
Yeah. Huge shout out to Naomi, by the way. She's really on fire. And seeing her win the title for the first time at Chamber, that was really cool, the way that the crowd reacted for her. And she really is. She's doing very well. She's getting better on the mic, too. And, you know, even in the ring. So.
You mean Orlando's own Naomi, former Orlando yes. Magic dancer?
Yes, that's right.
So Shinsuke Nakamura against Baron Corbin. I know that they want to do something with Baron, but he's got the case, so I'm going to say Nakamura has to win this match.
It's Nakamura, or else I'd say Corbin wins. You know what? Actually, I take that back. This will not end cleanly. This will be a DQ.
God, don't say that.
It will. It will, because you can't. All right, so you're pushing Baron Corbin to the moon right now, which I'm completely on board with. He's one of my favorite big guys, too, just kind of like Braun Strowman with me, but, you know, a little bit more of a tougher edge to him. And with Nakamura, it's Shinsuke Nakamura. You can't have him lose. So you can't have either guy lose. This is what pains me about booking.
You can have Corbin lose because he's got the ace in his back pocket. I mean, he's got the briefcase. He can cash in anytime he wants.
He does. But
by the way, I've got an idea to make Baron Corbin the biggest babyface on SmackDown. He cashes in right after Roman Reigns wins the championship.
On Raw?
Oh, on SummerSlam.
Oh, dude.
And then Corbin cashed in.
It is the only Money in the Bank contract. Wow.
He would be an instant babyface.
That's
the problem. I don't think they want him to be a babyface, but...
They tried a babyface run with him in NXT, and it worked for like a good like couple months, and then people were like, okay, what else does this guy bring to the table? Because they didn't give him the microphone. And you know, he's kind of choppy when he talks, but I think that just the pure in-ring ability, especially how it's developed over the last few years, is definitely there. So right. I do like it. And I mean, his moveset's excellent. That deep six move is amazing. The end of days is a great move.
He's gotten better. I was worried that they brought him up to the main roster too quick, but he's held his own. He's gotten better.
Most definitely. And there's a lot of ways to, you know, counter out of those moves and stuff like that. And that's where I look for.
Well, the thing that I like about the end of days is it's just a cool move. It's something totally different. Then he can do it on anybody, I think.
Yep. So yeah, I remember there was in the Dusty Classic. I forget who made the counter on it, but there was a sick counter to this. He countered somebody into the end of days, and it was like out of a Hurricane Rana or like a, you know, one of those like cruiserweight moves.
Yeah.
And it was one of the sickest things I've ever seen.
So they're doing AJ against Kevin Owens for the U.S. title. AJ's got to win that, I would think. Because, I mean, especially because he got pinned this week on TV.
Right. And also, I think they're going to kill that Kevin Owens Face of America gimmick. I think that's the reason why they had AJ win at the house show at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
And then they're going to, you know, re-up Kevin Owens here because he's kind of wallowing in the water a little here, too.
And then the main event is Orton against Jinder Mahal for the WWE Championship inside the Punjabi prison, which I don't know how many people actually understand the rules, but you have to escape both cages.
I can't believe that they had the Singh brothers explain the rules. That was the opening promo.
Yes.
Because people don't know. I mean, honestly, that's probably not good.
No. I think this is only the third time they've ever done a Punjabi prison match.
Bold prediction. You know how they said that Jinder Mahal can't cheat, right?
he can cheat in this match. He'll find a
great
way.
Great Khali is hiding under the ring somewhere.
Jeez.
I'm calling it right
it
now.
It would take him about a year to climb out from under the ring on top of it.
Yeah, it probably would. You're right. But I just foresee somebody interfering outside of the Singh brothers here. Maybe another Indian person. Kind of, you know, like how they got that stable going. I remember seeing rumors about that in NXT. They have another Indian superstar there. So maybe he debuts or something.
I don't think Orton's winning.
I don't think Orton's winning either. And then I don't know what they're going to do with Randy, because Randy is starting to become stale again. So we'll see what direction they take him. Do they turn him heel, or do they just have him in purgatory?
Yeah, then, to me, they've got to do Jinder against Cena next.
Yeah, absolutely. And then Cena's obviously going to go over in that one. But, you know, most credit to Jinder Mahal here, man. You know, to go from jobber to where he's at now, it's cool to see. It really is.
They give him the opportunity, and I think he's made the most of it.
And he looks badass in his entrance, man. When they have those lights go off and he walks out, he doesn't do it anymore. I don't know why, but they had that turban on him where it's only showing his eyes. I was like, dude, yeah. This dude looks like a legitimate superstar. In the way they have him coming out to the carpets following or whatever. Like, it's amazing how quickly things changed for him because of a move to SmackDown.
Are you surprised that WWE hasn't gone the stereotypical direction with him, whether some people would cry foul or not, when it comes to selling merchandise for him, like flying carpets or anything like that?
Oh, man. You know, oh, God, Brian. No,
Aladdin lamps or whatever.
I do hate that they always have to bring in an America versus India storyline here, or America versus everybody storyline.
They're
anymore.
Doing like three different America versus
the patriotism
whoever.
The patriotism thing is so overrun and stale in the subject. Like, have a little bit more of some kind of versatility in a storyline here, man. It's overused, man. Every time. I mean,
nasty foreigners, man.
Back after months off, and he's immediately immersed into a "I hate America" storyline. Like, come on, man. You got something better for him.
Dude, it was 2 years ago where Rusev was praising Vladimir Putin on WWE television.
Well, remember, he was representing Russia by way of Bulgaria. So
yes,
they didn't
by proxy.
Yes, yes.
It was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Those days of having Vladimir Putin's big head on the Titantron,
oh my,
those
gosh.
Are long gone.
Him with him shirtless riding the horse. I remember that like yesterday. But dude, I mean, but aren't you with me on this though? Like, the days of Sergeant Slaughter versus Iron Sheik are over. Like,
I want to see a break from it. Yeah, anymore. Like, I don't need the patriotic thing right now.
Yes.
It's not. Well, the whole thing is now it's like, oh, if you're not American, you're a foreigner. And that means you're an angry guy, or you're a mean guy, or you're a bad guy, or whatever. It's just like, you're a worldwide brand.
Yeah. I'm surprised they're not doing that with Sami Zayn. Oh, man. You know, he's a little bit he's not American.
Right. He's also Syrian, you know.
Yeah, he's Syrian. Muslim. Yeah.
Like, I think Sami would be like, there's no way in hell I am doing that.
No,
he would fight them
not.
On that.
Exactly. I just think it's overrun, and it's a tired topic.
So a couple other things, and we'll get to some questions people have sent in. You want to talk a little bit about NXT. Now, I'm perfectly honest with everybody about this. I don't always watch the NXT television show. I watch some of them, but I don't because I go to the tapings. So I see a lot of the matches. Now, I know I'm missing some of the other stuff, so I watch some of them. But where are they at right now on NXT TV?
Okay, you just want like a run through on where they're going?
Yeah, well, where are they at right now? Like, what show just aired?
Okay, so the show that just aired, they had Johnny Gargano come out. They had the debut of Bobby Fish.
Yeah.
And he faced off against Aleister Black, who I told you I wanted to talk about because I can't get enough of Aleister Black. It's like if they got the Mordecai gimmick right and then some. Because, I mean, this dude's got a badass entrance.
I think he's going to be fast-tracked to the main roster.
He kicks the crap out of you. He's got tattoos all over his body. He's kind of that tweener kind of guy.
Yeah.
But he's super intimidating, and I think that's really going to bode well for him. He hasn't said a word yet either. I think that's what is really kind of giving him that mystique. But Bobby Fish held his own against him, actually.
Would you put a manager with Aleister Black?
No, because I think he still has that, you know... he doesn't need to talk. He lets his fighting do the talking. He lets his kicks do the talking.
So you don't want to see like the Sinister Minister put with Aleister Black.
Oh my God. He's not Abyss. You can't. I mean, he's not wearing a mask.
Doomsday.
Oh God. That's so corny. Yeah, speaking about early TNA days. But man, I'll tell you what. Like I said, Bobby Fish held his own. I know you said that Kyle O'Reilly made his debut.
Spoiler alert, Kyle O'Reilly faces Aleister Black on this week's television for NXT.
And maybe Aleister Black beats him, and I'm guessing he does. And then those two team together and reform Red Dragon in NXT. That'd be awesome, wouldn't it?
Well, the world would be perfect then. They could face DIY or American Alpha. No, they can't because they broke up those teams.
Hey, you know what? TM61's probably going to come back soon, and they can give him a perfectly good feud.
Yes, they'll be back soon enough. I mean, when they got injured yet, it's about, we're getting near that time where he's going to be back.
Yeah. And they're going to be needed, too, because, I mean, they've got... I do like the heavyweight tag teams they have right now, though. They've got Heavy Machinery, Otis Dojovich and Tucker Knight, and obviously the Authors of Pain. Man,
dude, you're all over the names of everybody. I love it.
Dude, I'm a super mark. I'm trying to tell you this. Like, I've been watching NXT, like, even before it was on the WWE Network. Like, I'd go on Daily Motion and watch these things. Like, when Michael McGillicuddy would main event against Tyson Kidd. Like, but...
Otis is, like, one of the most over guys there, too.
Dude, he's awesome. He's like a big ball. He's a
fire
ball.
Hydrant.
Yeah, exactly. He's huge. But like they have a really good chemistry with each other, and they're starting to get over. I forget who his partner is, but they're finally giving Angelo Dawkins a push with a tag team part.
Oh, wait till you see that this week, because I was at the last tapings. Yeah. Dude, okay, so what's the name of that tag team? I just had it, man. The hell?
Know, hang on.
I got it. I'm bringing it up right here. Where the hell is that at? What the hell is that name? It's some with money. What the hell is the name of that tag team now?
I know. I saw the vignette for it, and I was like, oh, that's awesome. I like that. Because I love Angelo Dawkins, and they had him do that ballin' gimmick or whatever, kind of like MVP.
Right, and he's still doing it, but he's doing it with somebody else. What the hell is this?
I can't remember it either, man.
This is just going to kill me now, man. The people are out there yelling at me right now.
All right, fill some time. I got this.
Oh, I'm looking too, man. We're just both going to just kill time here. This is going to be ridiculous radio, man. I don't care. It's just like, man. What the hell is this tag team partner? God.
I've seen it. He faced off against... before he was the Velveteen Dream, he faced off against Patrick Clark. I remember his tag team, Street Profits.
Yes, Street Profits. Oh, my God. Right, so who's his tag team partner?
Post.
I can hit that post. What? Who's his tag team partner?
Montez Ford.
Montez Ford, he makes the team. Because as good as Angelo Dawkins is, okay? Montez Ford, with the dancing that he does and just the reactions, incredible.
Are they face tag team?
Yeah.
Oh, really? I thought they seem to be like heels, kind of.
Well, they kind of. Well, I guess they kind of. Man, they're so entertaining though. There's no way they're heels, dude.
Awesome.
I'm going to
awesome.
Spoil this. Okay, I apologize for anybody that's out there. So I'm going to spoil this. Watch for. I don't think it's this week's show. It's probably going to be.
Definitely isn't. It definitely isn't.
So not the first match with them that they did at the last tapings, but the second one. There was a move done in there. During the match, and I won't even say who or how or whatever, Montez Ford flipped out so much he ran through the crowd. Like he jumped the guardrail, went into the crowd, and like did a lap.
So he's energetic. Yeah, I do remember seeing this guy. He wasn't under the Montez Ford name though.
Right.
Yeah, I do. He's the Marine dude.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. But they're doing a decent job of, you know, keeping tag teams in there. It's okay the DIY split up because, I mean, Gargano and Ciampa are going to have the match of the year, so it's not going to matter.
Sure.
But in the main event side of things, Bobby Roode, I know they're having Killian Dane, which I'm a huge fan of, versus Drew McIntyre. And then the winner of that is going to face Bobby Roode for the championship at TakeOver.
Okay, and they just did the...
They did the Roderick Strong Bobby Roode match, which was amazing.
I was there for it, man. It was incredible.
And you want to talk about, you know, guys that are, you know, could be compared to Daniel Bryan, and that could be Roddy Strong for me, man. Because, you know, he's so tiny, but he, you know, he's also like a ball of energy, and he's got a great move set. And that Messiah the Backbreaker thing, man, he's got a lot of good moves there. And I feel like those vignettes about his family really got him over with the NXT crowd. And then with the women right now, I mean, Asuka has no competition. I think that's
awesome. Well, she's facing Ember Moon again, you know, a takeover.
Right, yeah. I mean, she'll probably, yeah, she'll end up facing her, but she's not going
to
lose.
Do you want me to ruin takeover and tell you what the matches are?
Oh, why? Go ahead.
I don't have to. I just asked you a question.
Well, I mean, we've already spoiled some tapings for people, so may as well.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now that you said, you know, McIntyre against, what's his name? I'm sorry.
Bobby Roode.
No.
Oh, Killian Dane. Yep.
So, I think we know who's going to win that match.
Yeah, McIntyre.
But it's not necessarily going to be McIntyre against Bobby Roode at TakeOver.
It's a triple threat, isn't it?
We don't know yet. I don't even know, because they do a match between McIntyre and Roderick Strong.
What?
That does not have a finish.
Hmm?
But they never said. The whole thing was, if Roderick Strong wins this match, he earns a shot at the title. But they didn't say he gets the shot at TakeOver. They just said he earns a future title shot.
Weird.
So it could be McIntyre against Roode at TakeOver, but they could also include Roddy. And then the match that they do that in is the last show before TakeOver. So maybe they would announce on that show or soon thereafter that Roddy is included, and they do a triple threat.
See, now immediately, the way we're talking about NXT here, the past 10 minutes that we've been talking, do you see how much intrigue there is surrounding this program?
Oh, absolutely.
And how good of a job Triple H does at running this program.
By the way, Johnny Gargano is going to be wrestling at TakeOver.
Excellent. It's probably not going to be against Ciampa, though, right?
No, Ciampa's not going to be back for like another 6 months.
Oh, really? It's that bad? I didn't know that.
He's going to be facing Andrade Cien Almas.
Perfect. And as much as people think that he's kind of dry, I like Andrade a lot. And I'm glad that they got him Rosita that's going to be managing him now?
Yeah, she's great.
Yeah, she was in TNA for a minute, right?
Yes. They didn't announce it, but I believe they're doing Hideo Itami against Cassius Ohno.
They are, because they're planting that seed for a Tommy's heel turn here, and he desperately needs it.
Oh, we planting a seed? I just spoiled something right there.
I mean, I knew he was turning heel, so it's not really going to be a spoil.
Yeah.
I mean, he got really mad after he lost to Roode clean, and then...
Oh, he got very mad on one of the tapings as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So, and then he needs that. He does need that, because he's just kind of... He's lost a lot of, you know, crowd reaction, honestly, the way I've been watching, at least.
Right. I don't know what they're doing with Aleister Black, though, on that show yet.
They are going to push him to the moon. They better.
Like I said, I think that he is going to be up on the main roster sooner than anybody could imagine.
Good. Put him on Raw or something.
I think he could be...
Raw needs something.
I think he could be fast-tracked. I don't know anything. I don't know this for fact. I think it could happen. By the way, they're also doing Authors of Pain against Sanity.
Oh, good. Oh, I like that. See, again, I'm going to keep going back to this. Main roster creative, pay attention to what NXT's doing. Look at that. Oh, my gosh. Two heels are versing each other. What's going to happen? I don't know. Mm. I mean, there can be a clean finish. My gosh. It doesn't have to be a DQ and push it two pay-per-views and go down the line. I'm very passionate about this stuff.
Apparently. So the Hardys are taking on, they're still arguing with Anthem and Impact Wrestling. So if you remember on Raw a couple weeks ago, it looked like the Hardys are cutting these promos, and you're like, oh, are we getting some kind of closure to this whole thing? And they're going to own the gimmick, and they're going to bring it to WWE, and, you know, they're allowed to do these promos, you know, on Raw.
Being hella teasing it, that's for sure.
Come to find out, according to the Hardys, at least, they say, we had a deal agreed to, and then it got pulled back by Anthem. And basically, Ed Nordholm over at Anthem didn't agree to it. Like, everybody else had signed off on it, but then he didn't agree to it. And there's Sports Illustrated and Justin Barrasso did an article last Friday, which Matt Hardy has since said, hey, great insight here. And basically said that, the deal was very close and they thought that it was done. But then Ed Nordholm and Anthem said, we want more money and we want like 50% of your earnings, including Jeff Hardy's music career.
Wow.
It was like ridiculous terms that they were never going to agree to. So dude, like Rebby, Hardy, you know, like called them out on Twitter. You know, Jared did a media conference call last week and he was asked about it and he said, we're not even close to a deal or anything. And Matt Hardy has since said like, hey, you don't want this to go any farther because we got secrets that we can reveal and they're not going to look good for you. So I don't know what's going on. I mean, I would think that if they were going to cut that promo on TV, they had to have been close.
That could be ugly.
Here's the thing. I mean, I've said this before. I totally understand why Anthem and Impact are trying to hold their ground and say, this is our property. We're not just, you know, handing it over. But then at the same time, they are losing the public argument. And that's the place where they need to win the most right now. So I understand it's going to hurt, you know, to lose that property to some extent, and you don't want to set a bad precedent for yourself. But in this case, I say, make the best deal you can, get the money and let it go and let everybody enjoy it. You know, the gimmick somewhere else.
Yes.
And make you look like the good guys. Like, oh, right, yeah, we allowed them to have it. We worked out of a deal and we're not all bad guys, you know, and don't hate it because people are going to hate, you know, Anthem over this.
Yeah. They're holding a gimmick that they didn't even come up with ransom. Like, I mean, Matt, for the most part, from my understanding, is the one that came up with all this. So I don't see how they have the right to, you know, keep it just because it was on their television program. I mean, I feel like Anthem can make a lot of money off of this and you know, invest it in Impact. But, I mean, Matt, they need to get that back, I think. Yeah, that's the right thing to do.
You did not watch the first day of the G1 Climax, did you?
I didn't get a chance to. I did not.
What are you doing with all your time?
Clearly watching too much WWE programming.
Summer League basketball from Las Vegas. That's what you're doing.
That's right. Summer League basketball. Writing about Bryn Forbes and Sindarius Thornwell.
There you go, man. It's not just all about Lonzo Ball, the MVP?
No. Surprisingly not. Though he did play well.
He did play well. So they did the first day where the second day is actually going to be later on tonight. And we're taping this on Wednesday. But they did. So the main event that they did was they did Naito against Ibushi. And everybody thought this was going to be like a crazy match. And it was a crazy match. And like any other year, you'd be talking about this being like one of the best matches of the year. Except this is the year that Kenny Omega and Okada are having like these lights out greatest matches of all time. But these guys, like, there's something to having a great match and there's something to like really taking it to another level when it comes to the physicality. And they did this in some ways, now not with like chops and slaps and stuff like that, but these guys were like doing freaking crazy stuff. Like there was a pile driver off the middle rope. At one point, like Ibushi tossed Naito into the turnbuckle. And remember, they don't do just turnbuckles. They have like the pads that go from the top to the bottom of the ropes in the corner. And he threw him like a lawn dart, like what Kevin Nash did years ago to Rey Mysterio.
Yeah.
That's what Ibushi did to Naito.
Oh, my gosh.
They're doing just crazy stuff. It's just like, maybe you need to calm it down a little bit. This is night
Japanese promotions, man. They'll go to the extra level.
It was
crazy. Sure.
It was night one of the G1, man. It was like unbelievable. But they also did, Naito won that match, like you would, I think most people would expect. They also did Zack Sabre Jr. against Tanahashi.
Okay.
Zack Sabre Jr. won by submission. He made Tanahashi tap out because he got a hold of his arm with his legitimately torn bicep and kept working on it the entire match.
You're naming these guys over here like Ibushi and Sabre Jr. I'm like, man, this is what was in the Cruiserweight Classic just a year ago.
I know.
Isn't that crazy how quick that goes? And then now they're going to have a Mae Young Classic tournament here.
By the way, I didn't go to any of those tapings.
Yeah.
But, you know, Ronda Rousey was there, and so were the four horsewomen of MMA, and the four horsewomen of WWE were there as well, except for Sasha. Bayley was actually pulled from a house show to be there, and they sure set up something between the women to where I don't know if they're necessarily going to do it. I've said for a long time, I thought Ronda Rousey was going to be in WWE and have a match at SummerSlam. And
I still think she's going to.
Now, maybe they'll do it at SummerSlam. Maybe they won't. Maybe this would be WrestleMania some other time. I think they could be setting up a four-on-four match here. Like an eight-woman tag team match with the MMA four horsewomen against the WWE four horsewomen.
Even the cross-brand thing, they would do that, you think?
Well, I mean, none of them, like Ronda is under contract, I still believe, but I don't think any of the other ones are when it comes to MMA promotions, or at least not UFC.
Interesting.
So, well, I mean, Ronda's under contract, but is she, how big of a struggle would that be to let her do a match?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's why I almost think, like, maybe she would have another fight. And there have been some rumors that maybe she is going to fight at the end of the year. That maybe this would be something like for WrestleMania next year. Something you'd do down the line.
Yeah, you know, just kind of, again, plant the seeds for...
Yeah, I mean, that's all they're doing. They're planting the seeds, and whether they do something on it or not remains to be seen. But they at least get people talking about it. And then if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. But if it does, then they feel like they've got some good business there.
Yeah, you can capitalize on that, that's for sure. Any kind of publicity like that and inter-promotion stuff, that's awesome.
Let's get to some questions before we get out of here from our faithful listeners of Between the Ropes. So everybody can follow us. We're on Facebook. It's facebook.com/Between the Ropes. We're also on Twitter at Between the Ropes. You can use ask us questions using the hashtag AskBTR. Let me get to as many as we can here because we've already been going pretty long. But let's fire off some from Facebook. Patrick Hogan says, I know you will talk about this rumor of Brock going back to fight in UFC. Do you see this? Do you see this a better relationship, weird wording, with WWE, UFC, so Ronda or even Connor can appear on WWE television? I don't think it would hurt that relationship at all, but Brock might have it in his contract. I think that's how he got to do the last fight, in that he can go and fight as long as it doesn't affect his WWE schedule.
Yeah, that makes sense. And man, I'll tell you what, if WWE would capitalize on getting Conor McGregor in the ring, it just for anything, that money.
Well, they desperately want to get him like just on TV right now before the Mayweather fight.
Yep.
Like they put out an invitation to both those guys, like, come on to Raw and, you know,
settle your differences.
Well, do another WWE one of your television. Little tour appearances just without the F-bombs.
Well, hey, man, Floyd had a appearance on WWE television and had a WrestleMania match with Big Show. So, I mean, he's already got a relationship with him. If you got McGregor to sign off on it.
Yeah, but then,
there would be so many odds.
Floyd has gotten in trouble for domestic abuse.
Very true.
He dropped a racial slur or a homophobic slur on the last appearance that they did on this crazy promotional tour.
What a crapshoot. Man,
so it's just like, I don't know if I mean, and then Connor, I mean, he's just dropping F-bombs left and right. So it's just like, I don't know if I want to
with his Irish
touch
accent.
That. Yeah. So let's see. Brad Mendenhall asks, there have been some tag team breakups that, in my opinion, were premature. Are there other teams from the past you think were split before their time?
Ooh.
Tag teams split before their time. I think the Rockers are split at the right time.
That takes some thinking right there.
Yeah, I know, right? Got to put on the old Wayback cap.
Maybe Team Hell No. Maybe they didn't have a long enough run.
Maybe, but I mean, those are singles guys put together as a tag team.
That's true. I mean, they're talking about guys that were split to... Eddie and Christian could have gone longer.
By the way, teams he has listed on here are Enzo and Cass, and also the team of American Aloha. Okay, it's American Alpha, okay? I know you mistyped that, but American Aloha.
Hey, Chad Gable's going to team up with the Shining Stars. Yeah. There you go. That's your American Aloha.
Aloha means goodbye. DIY, I think, is, you know, broken up too soon.
Maybe recently he's talking here.
Okay, I'll give you another one. I thought that while each guy deserved a singles run, I would have loved to have seen Beer Money stay together longer.
Okay, going to go into TNA here. I agree. Yeah, Bobby and James definitely were a great tag team. How about The Shield? That's a good one you think you could bring up. I mean, they weren't together exactly that long.
Oh, all those guys were surprised when they got brought up because they thought they had a big baby face running them still.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, especially when they were taking on Evolution and stuff.
Yeah.
They had plenty in the tank. Plenty.
Let's see. Bill Dixon asks, what do you think of Hiroshi Tanahashi continuing to wrestle with a torn bicep or G1? What do you think New Japan? Do you think New Japan should step in and force him to take time off? I wish they would force him to take time off and get the surgery and get ready in time for Wrestle Kingdom in January, but that's just not their mentality. So much so that he had a torn bicep and they put the Intercontinental Championship on him. Hmm. So they especially are not going to have him take time off now that he has that title. So I do think that, especially at
bad
his
timing.
Age, because he's what, 41 now, I think?
Yeah, he's definitely getting up there now.
Let him take some time off. It's going to be good for him at this age anyway. Let him take 6 months off, you know, and get his arms straight and let him just rest up his entire body. And he'll be better than ever when he comes back.
Unfortunate timing there with that injury. That's for sure.
Big time. Hector Salas Jr., do you feel with this angle, see what I did here, with Kurt and Jason sort of damaging Kurt Angle's career in any certain way? No.
No.
Not at all. Not at all.
No. You can't damage your career if you're Kurt Angle. You just got elected to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing that could damage your career is further off, you know, out of television issues that he's already addressed, and especially on that WWE 24, which was excellent, by the way. If you haven't gotten the chance to see it, you should watch it. Yeah, there's nothing that can tarnish his image.
Francis says, do you think we will see Kurt going into the mentor role with Jordan? Also, where do you think we're going with this? We talked about it earlier. As for mentor, yeah, that's definitely something you want to do right now. I'm sure they're going to play that up in the short term.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you'll probably see him coming out with him in the next, you know, few months.
Right.
And then eventually, like, he's going to have to go back to being a GM full-time. You know, like staying away from there and not showing, I don't know, favoritism. I bet you there'll be superstars being like, oh, you know, why is he getting all the attention?
Nepotism.
Or something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All that stuff. Well, the thing is, Kurt had done interviews even prior to joining WWE and was asked about American Alpha. And he was like, I'd love to work with those guys because I'd love to be involved with them. So
first thought was Team Angle when you saw American Alpha.
Yeah, I know.
Sure.
Right. let's see. Stanley Kendall asks, what do you make of the McGregor Mayweather build? Crazy, wild stuff. It was four stops, probably two too many. The second one, which was the one in Vegas, I believe. I think that was the best one. Is that the one that was in Vegas? Because they did what? They did L.A., they did Vegas, they did New York, and they did Toronto?
They did like the U.K., didn't they?
No, they did. They did L.A., New York, Toronto, and then London.
Oh, yeah, Toronto, that's right.
So, I think that's the word. Whichever the second one was, that was the best one. After that one, it all went downhill. Because I think they both ran out of material.
They started, you know, with the personal attacks and stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah. I feel like they could have built this, you know, better over time than they did. They kind of rushed it, I think. If you like, put it, like, in between times, like, maybe, like, a month or two in between each city over, like, I don't know, a span of a year or something, then you would have been a little better. But it was like just rapid fire. They just
want to get this out there as soon as possible because, I mean, before you know it, the fight's going to take place.
Yeah. What is it? August 26th?
Yeah. It's the week after SummerSlam.
Wow.
So on Twitter, you know, people can ask questions. It's at Between the Ropes. You can follow us there. You can ask questions using the hashtag AskBTR. Let's see. Here's a couple here. Jeremy asks him, oh, God, here's one of these. Fantasy book a card using someone from the Hall of Fame versus someone on the current main or NXT roster. What would be some of your top matches?
Oh, God. That's extremely vague because there's a lot.
Andre the Giant versus Braun Strowman.
Boom. Main right there. Perfect.
Who would you want Randy Savage to face?
Randy Savage. Why not Randy Orton? Like good Randy Orton, not like stale Randy Orton.
What about Randy Savage versus AJ Styles?
Whew. I mean, AJ Styles is one of those people that you could say, book him versus this person, right, and be like, oh man, that'd be a great match. You could say that literally against anybody for AJ. I mean, other than a big guy, I guess.
I will take that back, and I will put AJ in a match against somebody that literally almost happened earlier this year. Or it could have happened. It was offered, but it didn't happen. And that would be AJ Styles against Shawn Michaels.
Wait, that actually was real? That was a real thing?
Oh, you didn't hear about that?
I heard about it, but I thought it was like a fan rumor.
No. Shawn Michaels copped to it on Sam Roberts' podcast, where WWE offered him the match, and he turned it down.
Why?
He said, I'm retired.
Oh, my gosh. Well, yeah, Shawn would say that, yeah. But
yeah, Shawn, you could do Shawn against AJ. You could do Savage against...
Was it?
Would you do Savage against Nakamura or Savage against Sammy?
Sammy, yeah.
Who would you
put? How about Ricky the Dragon Steamboat?
Yeah,
against Nakamura.
Yep, and then Flair against. Who would you put Flair against?
Who's somebody that's really flamboyant and full of it? You know, maybe something like Kevin Owens. Yeah, I was gonna say like
put him against KO.
Yeah, like, you're trying to draw like comparisons.
Who would you put Roman against?
That'd be Diesel.
God, don't say that. That's not a good match.
It's not, but they're exactly the same person.
No. Don't say that.
Why?
Roman's a lot more athletic.
He is.
A lot more athletic.
I do like Roman's in-ring product. I just think he's a little, you know, boring. But Roman, oh, man. Like, for example, like his match against AJ Styles, it was awesome. Let's see.
I'll give you another match that's like a little weird. Well, a little bit weird. Seth Rollins against Ted DiBiase.
What made you think of that one?
I was thinking of like other Hall of Famers who retired. I thought of DiBiase.
Dean Ambrose versus Roddy Piper.
Yes.
But like not this Dean. Like kind of like serious.
The real
Dean.
Wild man Dean, yeah.
Like John Moxley.
Mm-hmm.
Dean Ambrose, yeah.
That'd I don't know cool. who to put Roman against, though.
Roman. Oh. Roman's just stuck.
What about Roman Reigns against Bam Bam Bigelow?
Eh. Sure.
Why not? Well, I don't know why we keep thinking of big guys, though. Like, he can be Edge? A smart guy. Edge against... Oh, you know what? That'd actually be a really good match. Edge
Fury
against...
on Spear.
Or you can put Batista in there. Edge against Batista at WrestleMania 24 was a really good match.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, we didn't even think about... Well... We didn't think about Taker, but I don't know where to put him.
Don't say Undertaker because we just...
No. I'm just like...
I thought you meant Roman.
No. I don't know who I'd put Taker against.
Undertaker versus Aleister Black. Book it.
There you go.
Book it.
That'll make you a happy boy.
It would.
Last couple. SBR... What was this one? SBARRUF. I can't pronounce that because I don't think it's pronounceable. Says, who is Jason Jordan's mom?
Did you see those jokes about Kurt Angle and the Charmel storyline from in the mid-2000s?
Yes.
But the thing is, if that was true, then Jason Jordan would be 13 years old. So that's kind of not exactly realistic.
What about Jacqueline?
Did Jacqueline go to college with Kurt Angle? Because that's the storyline.
We don't know.
Maybe she did.
Now, did maybe Kurt say they went to college together or he met her when he was in college?
While he was in college.
It didn't say that she was in college, though.
Yeah. All right. Well, so Jacqueline, Jazz, just think about any African-American.
What if it was an older woman? And that's another reason why Kurt wanted to hide it.
An older woman?
Because like, maybe he was like 18 and she was like in her 30s.
Maybe. Who knows?
Just throwing it out there, man.
That's where your mind has to go start racing.
Wrinkles. Wrinkles in the storyline, man. We're adding layers here.
Oh, geez.
Let's see. One more. Why are there basically only four women on Raw? Shouldn't they add someone from SmackDown or elsewhere?
They have. Oh, my gosh. This is another thing with me, man. They've completely screwed over Emma on that show. She is such a good talent. I remember her matches with Paige in NXT, like when it first started getting going on the network. And they were excellent, excellent matches. And she has her character with that. That badass female cop look. It's a good one. It's a good character.
Oh, I loved it. And
the fact that they hadn't even had that Emelina stuff happening, I was like, what in the world are they doing with her? And then they don't even give her any TV time She's great on the mic. She has an awesome accent. She's good in the ring. I don't understand it, but
she tweeted like during Raw, like sitting here backstage at Raw, it's my 5-year anniversary since joining the company or something like that. And I was thinking like, okay, that's cool. She's putting it out there, but is that going to be interpreted that she's bitter because she's not on TV?
It should be interpreted as bitter because she should be bitter.
Right.
And then you've got somebody like Summer Rae who can even, you know, kind of bring it in the ring, and she's a beautiful girl. Like, I don't understand why they don't use these guys and they just stick to the same four. I completely agree with whoever asked this question because it is really annoying. So hopefully, you know, going off of Raw and staying on the women's thing, this Mae Young Classic, you know, will do something and really make it good for these women athletes to get a good platform.
Yeah. So I appreciate you joining me here on the podcast. It was a little bit of short notice, but you've been wanting to do it. So I'm glad you got to come on. We had a great time talking.
Of course.
Throw out your Twitter name again.
Okay. If you watch basketball or, you know, sports, it's at Spin Davies. That's my professional account. And again, my mark and throw out all caps and boo when Roman comes out account is at Spinny Wrasslin, SpinyWrasslin.
Spinny Wrasslin.
Spinny Wrasslin.
See, I didn't even call you Spin Davies the entire podcast.
Yeah, how about that? Not in the spin zone, in the spin cycle.
Hey, could have said
all those other.
I'm going into the spin
names.
Zone. which we first started doing while taping the podcast, and then I kept doing it, and you're like, oh, we're actually going with this. That was just subtle way, like, hey, you know, you can cut that out anytime you want.
So subtle. Good Lord. Yo, real quick, who's your pick for the Mae Young Classic? I got Candice LeRae. Mrs. Johnny Gargano.
Well, I already know the final two, though, so I can't pick.
Ah, you suck.
She might be there, though.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say.
Sound like it. Okay. Okay, fine. Okay, act like you didn't know and didn't see any of it.
My picks would have been either Candice LeRae or Toni Storm.
Okay. Mia Yim would also be up there for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? They're going to, put out like half of it?
On the network.
Yeah,
the network should be showing the first round.
Like a couple weeks, and then they'll put out the other half of it.
Yep.
The week after that, and then they have the finals coming up in September.
Okay. It'll just be like the Cruiserweight Classic then.
They're doing it, I believe they're doing it like right after a Raw or a SmackDown.
Oh, good. Cool.
I should actually know that, but I don't. I'm trying to remember.
Man. I just hate how everything has to be taped. Because you go on the world of Twitter or any kind of internet and everything's just spoiled.
I didn't spoil that for you, though.
No, I know you didn't.
I spoiled everything else for you.
In general here.
Hey, man, that's what happens when you listen to a podcast like this. I'm going to spoil stuff, okay? But you know what? It's hardcore fans that are listening to this.
It is. It is.
No, the hardest of hardcore.
An hour and a half podcast of people talking about wrestling unless they love it.
This is the hardest of hardcore fans. We're all just here talking and about wrestling and listening about wrestling discussion and having a good time with it, hopefully. And we try to have fun with it, try to give our criticisms, but at the same time, I'm not going to, you know, lose my cool and go crazy and scream about stuff.
Exactly. Exactly. We love the product. That's why we like to do this.
At the end of the day, I'm still a wrestling fan. So appreciate everybody.
Still will be, damn it.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So everybody, please rate and review the podcast on iTunes. Please give us 5 stars. That helps out tremendously. But you can also subscribe on iTunes. We're on Stitcher, Google Play, the TuneIn app, and on SoundCloud as well. Appreciate Spencer for joining me here. Follow me on Twitter. I'm @BrianFritz, and I will talk to you next time right here, Between the Ropes.